Yes, when you're ready, you have to come and have your best conversations, or at least one of the best conversations you will have anywhere, right here on 92.39 Jure. In fact, yes, we are ready to get into our final conversation, and it is about bullying. But this time, we're taking it a notch deeper. We're getting into the realm of governance. Now, how many of you know what qualifications are needed for you to become a senator, a governor, a president of this country? Well, remember a few months ago, well, maybe a year ago, we had a lot of people make comments, and you know, 2 years ago, about the not too young to rule bill or act and things like that. Some were like, there was no point. This constitution already has that enshrouded within its pages. What people can do if you're young enough, and the age for a lot of these positions, including the presidency, you know, is not 12 or 20. We're talking about people who can come up from about 35 up to 45 and, you know, make aspirations to become a president in this country. But that's not what we're talking about, just the basic qualifications, but we're talking about how these institutions work. Because you see, the three tiers of government that we have, the executive, the judiciary, and the legislative, on paper are meant to be separate, independent, but yet cohesive. Let me say that again. They're meant to be separate, independent, but yet cohesive. That means they should work all in tandem for good governance to be established here in Nigeria. But over the years, it's not particularly been the story that we would like to have on the pages. So let me give you an insight, and very quickly, did you know that to become a senator, the minimum requirement you need to become a senator, apart from, you know, being in sound mind, talking about educational qualification now, you know, the minimum you need is a school certificate. Did you know that? Did you know that? Okay, now we're going to get to my guest this morning, Richard Wokucha, constitutional lawyer right here in Port Harcourt. And the question we're going to pose to him is all about bullying. And I'm going to give a scenario, and you are most welcome to the conversation. Hello, Port Harcourt. Mr. Richard, good morning, please.
Good morning, Raiden.
All right, thank you very much. All right, so we've asked you to join us this morning in our conversation because it directly deals with your career path. You were a lawyer. You chose the path of the legal profession, and you've still been practicing. You've been practicing for years now. Now, our conversation is about the bullying in government. Now, I just made mention that the three tiers of government, executive, legislature, and the judiciary, are ideally, at least on paper, separate, independent, but yet cohesive. That means they are meant to come together to promote good governance in our country, our beloved country, Nigeria. But what many Nigerians experience these days is not exactly the same. We're talking about bullying. We're going to go to you. Sir, what is the basic requirement for someone to become an elected official, say House of Rep member or senator or president?
Well, they are required to be holders of school certificates or equivalent of that. School certificate or its equivalent, and that includes primary school certificate with ability to express themselves in English.
That's the basic requirement for us here in Nigeria. Okay, now that's for most political positions. You're talking about senator, the presidency, I believe, is about the same, right?
For political office in executive and legislature.
Yes. All right. So minimum, you must have a certificate, school certificate, primary and secondary school, and able to express yourself.
School certificate, which means secondary school, but the constitution defines it to include having education up to that level, including possessing a primary school certificate and being able to express yourself in English.
Okay, being able to express.
So the minimum requirement is actually primary school certificate and being able to express yourself in English.
The minimum is primary school certificate.
Yes, according to the definition of the Constitution, the definition section, it talks about what the Constitution means by school certificate. It includes that, primary school certificate and being able to express yourself.
Okay, all right. Now, some of the other qualifications here says that under any individual, right, will be disqualified to be elected as a political aspirant if the person is a member of a secret society, has been indicted for embezzlement or fraud or by a judicial committee, has presented forged certificates to the INEC, and has been dismissed from public or civil service in either the federal or state local government councils. Now, that's for disqualification. Now, if I may, sir, what is the minimum requirement for any Nigerian to become a judge in this country?
To be a judge, you have to have taken a first degree in law from an accredited university or recognized university. You must have attended the law school and been called to the bar, and you must have practiced law as a practitioner for a minimum of 10 years.
A minimum of 10 years. That's 10 years working experience.
You qualify to be appointed a judge of the High Court in Nigeria, whether federal or state.
So 10 years. You must have gone to the university, practiced for 10 years, before you
are... Not a university, gone to law school and been called to the profession, called to the bar, and then practiced thereafter for 10 years.
For 10 years. Okay, all right. Now, I do know that for an individual to be a licensed medical doctor in this country, the person has to have gone through secondary school, has to have gone through medical school, about 6 years of training, about a year of housemanship also, before you can get into higher levels of either consultation or, you know, specialization and things like that. That could run into decades and things like that. So for lawyers, for doctors, a lot of education, and I like to believe the same thing in engineering. Now, when we talk about governance, Nigerians say it looks as though the other arms of government are arm wrestling or even bullying the judiciary. We're talking about men and women who have spent over 10 years in study, as compared to a group that the minimum requirement is primary school leaving certificate. These individuals somehow find their way into government, and we don't have a system right now that people say is working for the people. So our question is, how is bullying coming across in government when people like you, Andy, members of the MBA, as learned as they are, seemingly are taking orders from people whose words may not really matter in the long scheme of things? How is bullying coming across in our government?
Well, it's a function of the offices that the individuals are occupying. Now, in every responsible client, in every reasonable country, government is a public trust. And a period within which you are in government is like a period within which you have taken the Holy Communion and you must stay holy. People don't get to government and they behave the way they behave as individuals. Now, unfortunately, in this part of the world, accepting government office is a promotion to the positions of limitless, as it were, opportunities for self-enrichment and for exhibition of power. Now, because of that mentality which we have, which separates us from the rest of the developed and responsible world, we experience the bullying you're talking about, the kind of acts which are, in every sense of the word, actually bullying. So we experience it because of the state of mind of those who have been elected to exercise powers, who see themselves as powerful people, fathers of the nation and of the state, lords of the manor, whose word must be law and must be obeyed, whether or not they are in accord with the law of the land.
So it's been an aberration of what is meant to be, at least on paper, at least in this country.
Certainly, an aberration from what of what governance is supposed to be.
So
the governance is separated into three units of lawmaking, law execution, and interpretation. And as you said at the beginning, they are supposed to be independent and to complement one another. It takes effective performance of the three for you to have a free and democratic society. But it's not about flexing muscle and showing and deciding who is the most powerful. No, that's not what governance is supposed to be about.
All right, so that's not what governance is meant to be about. Now, a very popular Nigerian lawyer, many in Nigeria will probably have heard his name before, is a senior advocate of Nigeria, Femi Falana. I'm sure... All right, so I'm sure. I'm sorry, my editors are giving me more questions to ask. This man, a lot of people have probably heard about him, Femi Falana. I'm sure you know about him, sir. Okay, all right. Now, about 2 years ago, Mr. Falana had an interview on a popular television station, that actually is China's television here. And at that time, right, the human rights advocate said on the breakfast television program, right, that he had compiled, right, about 32 court orders being disobeyed flagrantly by the government of Nigeria, which is not in line with the rule of law. Now, he is, and I'm quoting him, saying it doesn't lie in the mouth of the Attorney General or the President of the country to choose and pick which orders of court to obey. Now, recently, sir, in the NBA, we have people who have also made mention that the NBA itself has become weak in establishing and fulfilling its obligations, talking about, you know, adhering to laws and things like that, you know, people giving out numerous court orders, going to different courts on the same matter to try and get a solution that will fit them or their wards. So from the legal angle, what is the implication of this bullying, and how does it impact on the society if the whole, if the government of Nigeria can disobey 32 court orders?
There is a saying among the originated among the Igbos about an epileptic patient who was visited by a sympathizer, and while he was being asked what exactly is happening to you, the speech came, and he said, "Brother, use your eye and observe." For yourself, see what you're asking for yourself. What is the implication? The implication is the way we are. What you are seeing today that is wrong with our society, why we seem to be different, why we seem to be unable to function with so much material and human, natural and human resources, why we are unable to develop despite everything, why we have four or more refineries and are still importing oil for how many decades, is the function of this aberration we're talking about. When public office becomes a private estate for officers or public officers who are elected into them, what you get is the kind of country we have now. We are in security and everything is running amok. And governance is an instrument for display of power and for self-enrichment. Governance suffers. Development of the country, which comes from effective governance, suffers. No Nigerian needs a lesson on what the consequences of what it has just asked is. They simply have to look at their condition and the condition of their country to know the consequences of failing in governance. It simply means governance is asleep and power is being flexed and enjoyed by its holders at no risk and at no inconvenience to themselves. No consequences even after they have left office. Our condition is the consequence bullying in government and abuse of public office and public trust.
Abuse of public office and public trust. Now, I'm not going to mention any direct names because some of these cases are still being debated in court, and we can't, as it were, wade too much into them. But I'm very sure you are in the know of certain political office holders who at one point in time were ordered by courts to either come, appear, even in the Senate. We've had public officials summoned by Senate, ordered by the courts, but we've had these people ignore these summons, ignore these orders. How do we then fight bullying if the government in itself, whether it's executive, legislature, and judiciary, don't seem to be working in tandem? How do we then fight bullying?
It will become impossible to address such problem, and it will be every man to himself and God for us all. Everybody will now live by the grace of God. Where the courts are not respected and rules of courts are not obeyed by those who are in who hold public positions and in position to make public decisions, the consequence will definitely be abuse, gross abuse of those positions, and abuse will not happen at all levels, because when you can't get justice from above, you also don't feel compelled to give justice below. And so what will reign the order of the day will be impunity. It simply describes the Nigerian condition at the moment.
Which simply describes Nigerian condition at the moment. If you're just joining us, we have Richard Wokocha, constitutional lawyer, with us via telephone, and we're having a conversation about bullying in government. Now, he's basically said that the bullying is in existence, and that's why we have what we have here. Now, we're going to go on a break shortly. When we come back, we're going to open the phone lines, and we want you, yes, you the listener, to call in, give us an example, ask the lawyer the question, what we can do. Before we do that, this is my question to you, sir, before we go. Now, as more and more Nigerians are more aware, we're getting more people making comments like, I will sue you to court, I will get here, I will do this. As more and more people are appreciating what the courts can do, the question is the courts, or are the courts as effective as they should be?
The courts are doing their best, given all the limitations, which includes the volume of work that they have to do and the sometimes paucity of facilities with which to work, and the character of the work they have to do, long handwriting through the day and all that. They are doing the best they can. I guess that the bulk of what is left outside them. But again, they are also doing the best they can in the face of bullying. And bullying, as you know, comes in all manner of directions. The court in itself does not automatically perform magic. So if you bring in pre-prepared elements who are tuned in to be used as instruments of bullying, you will get that degree in judgment. So the courts are doing their best in the face of all the challenges, including bullying.
All right, Mr. Richard, we're going to ask you to hold on, and we'll get back to you right after our break.
All right,
so there you have it. When we come back, we're going to open the phone lines, and we're going to be engaging you, yes, you, and hopefully, maybe if we can get those who are in the political offices who are listening to pay very close attention to what the people are saying.
Hello, Port Hackett. Say hello to the buzz, the vibes, the peculiarities and regularities of a contemporary city.
Hello, Port Hackett. Let's talk about this modern metropolis sprawling from the city to the exurbs, the suburbs, township, community and your locality.
Let's talk about happenings in your neighborhood, standards at your workplace, social amenities and issues of great concern to you on Hello, Port Hackett.
Hello,
every weekday from 9 a.m. to midday on your number one station for talk, news, and sports. 92.3 Nigeria Info.
Let's talk.
All Welcome back. My name is Jude. Hello, Port Harcourt. So we're speaking with Richard Wokocha, a constitutional lawyer here in Port Harcourt. We're going to open the phone lines right about now. I want to get to hear from you. 0809-030-6416. 0809-030-6416. We're talking about bullying in government. And what exactly can be done? Mr. Richard, good morning to you.
Yes. Good morning, George.
Good morning. Thank you very much for being with us this morning. Now, we have a first question on WhatsApp this morning. And it says, please ask the lawyer, what can lawyers do to fight the government that is consistently disobeying orders?
What lawyers have done in the past is to advise government, privately advise government by leadership of the bar, visiting relevant government officers and discussing issues of critical concern, critical public concern that relate to the law and their public function. That has been done quietly. There have been times when the bar has had to issue statements to express their concern over activities that they consider critically violating of the public trust and capable of causing creating problems. Those are other steps taken, but we still reserve the right to criticize and to name and shame. Now, when we do all that, it may not twist their arms. We cannot twist their arms automatically. But when all of this is done and you are a public officer, you cast yourself in a very responsible mode when, despite all this outcry from well-meaning members and professional groups, you continue on a path that is clearly illegal. Last resort for lawyers is to file actions, and there have been times when the Nigerian Bar Association has taken those steps.
Hmm.
And I commend that to bar associations, both at national and local levels. We should be prepared to file actions to compel government to hold government accountable and to compel government to work in accordance with the law, because government is a public trust and a public office holder is holding that office in trust for citizens. So these are steps that the bar can take. When that is done and government chooses to breach the law or breach the judgment of the court, it has another consequence. It sets citizens free to react in any manner that they are able to react in order to preserve the rights which the court has upheld. Because if the action of government infracts on citizens' rights or affects the citizens' rights or public rights, and the court make that declaration, then I will be entitled to do everything I can to preserve my rights which has been upheld by the court in the face of illegal attack from government. And the worst thing the government can do is arrest me for resisting their illegality and charge me to court. And when I tell the court have affirmed that I have the right and that what they are doing is a violation, the court will set me free. So the possible consequence of resorting to litigation and getting the court to make pronouncements whether or not the executive wants to be responsible or irresponsible is that it sets citizens who act in accordance with the law free from unlawful prosecution. As you can attempt the prosecution, but it will end when it meets the objection that your action is in conflict with the decided position of the court.
Okay.
So it, those benefits are there, and I don't think we should chicken out or become weakened by the fact that we cannot get the exact result we want. We can get it in a roundabout manner once we get the court to affirm the lawfulness of our position.
Okay, I have a message here. I'm going to take a call. And this one here is from Tammy. Tammy says, Jude, please ask your guest, what about those lawyers who are in cahoots with the same government to undermine the rights of Nigerians? Before you answer that, let's get the call here, please. Hello, Port Harcourt, 93, good morning.
Hello.
Hello, good morning, please.
Hello.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, welcome, please.
Is that Samuel?
Yeah, this is Jude on Nigeria Info.
Hello?
Yes, good morning.
Is that Samuel Oji?
Wrong number. Wrong number, please. Apologies, wrong number. All right, sir. Let's continue with our question, please.
Yes.
So someone sent a message. What about those lawyers who are in cahoots with the politicians to undermine the rights of Nigerians? What do we do with them?
Well, when lawyers act as lawyers and undermine the rights of the citizens, they make themselves liable to that citizen. If they act as lawyers in challenging, for instance, decisions of court that clearly state what the law is, in that case, they commit no offense because every party to a dispute is entitled to appeal. So if they appeal, for instance, they are acting within the law. And if your action is right within the law, it cannot not at the same time be said to be wrong. Even if we question the reasonability of the hook that the decision will be overturned. Besides acting as a litigation lawyer appealing against the decision that has been made, any other thing that a lawyer does that is not directly in connection with that renders him personally responsible and liable to those who have been affected. The bar used to have the black register. We still have the black register. Not much has been done about it, in which lawyers who have engaged in infamous conduct or infamous professional conduct, even if they are within the law but are infamous, are registered in those black register, which is used to say that the bar considers them persons of wrong conduct. But where a conduct is falls within gross misconduct or infamous conduct in professional capacity, there is always the option of the bar initiating disciplinary procedure against such lawyers.
Okay, what?
Which can end with removal, withdrawal of license, and suspension.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning to you, and welcome, please.
Yeah, my question to the lawyer is, why is it that today that we are still sustaining the political immunity being given to the political functionary, especially the president, the governor, and the vice president? Don't we think that is what is pushing them into suppressing others and into doing whatever thing that they want to do? Because the concept of that immunity is that no agent that has the right to take the president or governor to court, except after his leadership, permitting them to do whatever thing they want to do and go through. What is the national judiciary waiting to remove that immunity? Thank you.
That's a very good question, Barrister Richard.
Yes, it's been a question that's been on for a long time. But I think it's a question that is really not relevant. The reason is this. The concept of immunity for chief executives and their deputies who are engaged chiefly in the act of governance of the sovereign state is a universal principle. It's something that you have in more than 80%, if not more than 90% of the countries around the world. The simple logic is that a man whose work is to ensure that government is running and society is running every day, who lives at our expense and lives in our house, public house called government house, 24 hours doing our work, must have the environment in which to do that work. If he has to be dragged around and he has to leave office and be in court every day, he won't be able to do the work. So what the law simply did, what the constitution simply did, is postpone the doomsday for him. So I think it's irrelevant because the law did not say he cannot pay for what he has done. Even you as a citizen can sue him for a wrong done to you while he's in office. Now, I consider it irrelevant because if you are unable to sue him when he has left office, what do you think you can do when he is in office and appoints the attorney general who has to initiate processes and appoints the officers against whom you are reporting? If you are unable to deal with him, take up the matter and demand justice when he has left office, how can you do it when he is in office with his officers who are answerable to him?
Go on, sir.
We should be asking is, why are we not holding them accountable when they leave office? Because it is what we do when they leave office that should frighten those in office
and cause them not to engage in things that will give them that kind of problem when they leave office and no longer have the cover of immunity. If you can't deal with a man when he has lost immunity, how do you want to deal with him when he has immunity or when he's in control? So I think we need to change that argument and rather argue that we should ensure that they are made to pay for their misdeeds from while they are in office as soon as they leave office.
As soon
That's
as they
what
leave.
The law says.
Okay, now it's interesting here because there's a message here. This is from Joy. Joy is saying, but how can we enforce these laws when even after they come out, lawyers will create injunctions preventing them from being prosecuted? Thank you very much, Joy.
Not in all cases. You've seen cases of several former office holders who have been prosecuted. For crimes committed or corrupt activities undertaken while they are in office. Yes, we have had that peculiar injunction that was given in River State, but you won't find more than one or two of such matters. In recent times, we have had an injunction restraining the EFCC from investigating the former governor of Bayelsa State on the grounds that the property they are investigating is one which he has already disclosed to the code of conduct bureau as a property that he acquired by loan. And I have said that was wrong in law, but that's not a problem because the EFCC has the right to appeal. If they fail to appeal, then we can hold them responsible for pollution. So, apart from those one or two cases, we have several cases where former governors have faced their misdeeds and been jailed for it.
Apart from Joshua Dare, that probably springs to mind immediately, not very many. And it's been about, 20 plus years of democracy, and we've had
only Joshua Dare. A number of lawyers former governors have gone in. Remember that Ojeze Okalu only got reprieved after the Supreme Court observed an error in the fact that the case was decided on a judge. I was no longer a judge of that court. So a number of them have faced such things, and some are still facing trial.
Yeah, some are facing trial. We would remember Lucky Gunadian, and obviously the former Delta State Governor James Ibori, who was indicted in a foreign country, but not in Nigeria.
Jailed in a foreign country.
Yes, that's when all of Nigerians are asking questions. Yes, like I made mention, Joshua Jare comes readily into mind, but the question still has been asked. Okay, so he's been in prison, but yet there was information that he was still getting benefits that shouldn't have been given to him as a former governor and as a senator. All of this still pointing out to who is having the power to circumvent these laws. The bullying that we're talking about.
I agree. Whether or not he gets his benefit should become a function of what the law says concerning if a person is convicted after he has left office. And whether those benefits are tied to his not having a case when he leaves office. If they are not related, then they are not related. But if the law provides that if he's indicted after he has left office, he should stop getting his benefits, then we can hold the person who is keeping him his benefits responsible. Otherwise, it does not cease from being the former governor who has served in that position, except where the law excludes him as a result of what we are talking about.
Okay, all right, let's get a call. Hello, good morning. Hello, Port Harcourt.
Hello.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Yes, please.
This is Dakuku from Okiki.
Good morning, Dakuku.
So, for what I want to talk about the judiciary, so, listen, some of the laws made by the executive, which passed to them for them to know what to believe. We want to each contract, most of the president and the governors, the immunity that covers this, we have to change most of laws so that Nigerians will be free. That's why you see most of governors and presidents perform badly. Like a governor who knows the rights of the citizens, he will not, because he was on the position, on the power, he was able to not to obey the court order. And most of them are judiciary members. Like one of the states where electoral took a governor to court. And they defeated the governor. The governor is deemed to obey the court order to be paying them.
Mm.
What are we having in this? Is it a good in the country? It's not good. Let them go back to the House of Representatives or Senate. Who make the law, inform the law, so for them to remove it. So that most of them will be acting. As you see, most of them behaving badly. It's good. That we can see in this country.
Right. Thank you very much, Dakuku. All right, sir. Well, let's get back to you, Sir Richard. Sir Richard.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we have another message here. I'd like to read it to you, please. It says, good day, Jude. Why is that our judiciary cannot speak the truth against the ruling party? The case study is Imo State rascality that is causing trouble in the state right now because the people never voted for the present governor. So what exactly is the judiciary meant to do in scenarios like that?
We have to prove a case before the court can make an order. The courts do not initiate matters.
Mm.
Sometimes technicalities cause embarrassing situations. But embarrassing as they sound, sometimes morally, they are legally not wrong. You remember we have had a scenario in this state where governorship election was held and somebody was subsequently declared governor.
Mm.
Because of internal matters that were not handled properly. It was consistent with the law, because as far as the law is concerned, it's the party that contests election. And so if there's an internal tussle, whoever wins the tussle is the person recognized by the law as the proper person. So you have this kind of scenarios where a layman, sorry for me to use that expression, by that I mean somebody who is not an expert in the law,
yes,
or in a particular team, in this case law, and maybe a layman with the respect of broadcasting, so everybody can be a layman. So we are one who is not a lawyer, will have difficulty understanding how a man who was not in the ballot became governor. But that development was consistent with the law. So you have some of such situations. They do not automatically mean that what transpired was illegal. It means that you were unable to prove otherwise, or they were able to prove that the scenario was consistent with the law. So, taking the example the gentleman is talking about, if there was a wrongful cancellation that took place, and that cancellation was proved to be wrongful, and the court agreed it was wrongful, the consequence of that upholding or proof of the wrongfulness of that cancellation is the inclusion of that it was cancelled. So no matter how immoral it looks to you, it does not change the fact that it is consistent with the law. So sometimes these things require looking at them closely with clear understanding of what the position of the law is on that issue before you can heave a sigh of relief that you are satisfied that injustice was not done. But I mean, we are not all equipped to handle everything, except those who are privileged to be sufficiently prepared and professionally in the area. Others will definitely leave with the impression that cross injustice has been done. But where the courts make a declaration, the courts have made a declaration. I think we should worry more about how to hold them accountable. There are two methods the Constitution provides for you. Use your representatives to initiate proceedings for them to be removed where they have done what the Constitution says is an offense for which they can be removed. Or in the alternative, make sure that they are held accountable when they leave office. If you can't hold them accountable when they are out of office, even when they have the yam and the knife in their hand, that you can hold them accountable. So I think we shouldn't waste our time with that argument of removing immunity. We should rather emphasize holding them accountable as soon as they lose immunity.
Okay.
That's the more reasonable thing to do.
All right. Thank you very much, Richard Wokoja, for speaking to us this morning. It's been a pleasure and an enlightening one at that this morning. Thank you very much. All right. So bullying is still on everybody's mind. We're still looking for ways to improve, and we hope to find it as soon as we possibly can. We need to be better at governing ourselves. My name is Jude. Thank you for listening. This has been Hello Port Harcourt.